about? It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Hi, Amy. How you going?
I'm good, Laurie. You?
Really good. I'm actually really excited to talk today because it's a conversation about capital gains.
Yeah,
hey,
you like tax? That makes two of us.
Well, I'm very strange about it. I do love talking about it. So I guess I'll jump straight into that one since I brought it up first. What are your thoughts on a capital gains tax and the options that have been proposed at the minute?
Yeah, look, my concern is that I think before you start talking about what new taxes you bring in, you've got to say, do we need to be paying more tax? And I don't think there's any case being made at all that the government needs to take more tax. We're already pretty heavily taxed, and I don't think there's a case to take even more. But with the report out yesterday, it seems pretty clear that the government is set on bringing in a capital gains tax of some sort. My concern is that that's going to create all the wrong incentives. It's going to punish people for working hard, savings, getting an investment together. It's going to be a tax on small business. It's going to be a tax on farms. It's going to push up rental markets or rents in the rental market. And I think none of those things make good sense. As well as that, we've seen in other countries where they've been brought in that they are incredibly complex. So South Africa brought in a capital gains tax not so long ago, and the consumer guide to how to understand it was 800 pages long. So, look, there'll be a big win for tax consultants and accountants trying to work through the stuff, a heavy burden on taxpayers, and actually indications are that it won't actually raise a whole heap of money for the government at the end of the day. So we don't support it. We don't think it's necessary, and we don't think New Zealanders need to be paying more tax.
Mm. The other side of that is really, well, Westpac Bank put out a report not that long ago that suggested that a capital gains tax would decrease house prices by about 10%. What are your thoughts?
Well, actually, what they've said is that if it was introduced as a broad-based tax across all property, that could be the case. But the government has made it clear that they won't do that. They will exclude all owner-occupied houses, which takes about 65% of the rental property market out. And remember that any other property sold within 5 years is already subject to a capital gains tax. So the reality is this is going to make very little difference on house prices in New Zealand, given that about 85% of house transactions aren't going to be taxed any differently. And even the tax working group yesterday came out and said tax has not been the issue in housing affordability. So we keep, we remain saying the same thing, which is that the way we have to deal with housing affordability and house prices is make sure we're building a whole lot more houses, and putting more taxes into the market isn't going to help that. The other thing too is if you have a look at the other countries around the world where there's a capital gains tax on housing, they're dealing with exactly the same sorts of high housing price and house price issues that we see in New Zealand. So to suggest that this is some sort of silver bullet to house prices just doesn't make sense. And actually, even the tax working group themselves acknowledge that tax has not been the problem in the issues of house prices.
Well, I mean, if we look at Sweden, for instance, which I know everyone is going to jump to because it's a very socialist country, but they have a 30% capital gains tax and a 97% rate of home ownership. I think that is kind of the case a lot of people argue for.
Yeah, but I don't think you can simply say because they have that, that's the solution. I mean, if you look at Australia where there's a capital gains tax, they've still got very high and unaffordable house prices. If you look at, I was just over in Ireland earlier in the year, they've got the same situation and again the same issues with housing affordability. So I think you can point to just as many examples where there's a capital gains tax and they've still got very, very significant issues with home ownership. The simple reality in all of this is if we want to bring house prices down and make home ownership easier, we've got to do two things. We've got to make sure we're building plenty of new houses and we're still not keeping up with the numbers we need to build. And we've got to work on raising incomes and incentivizing people to save and get ahead. And paying more tax and imposing more taxes isn't going to do that.
Okay, so an increase in tax means you have more funding to put into creating houses, correct?
Well, no, only if you regard the government as being the housing market. And, mm-hmm. and the reality is the vast majority of houses are built by the private sector. And they will build houses when there is obviously the land to do it, where the infrastructure is in place, where the zoning rules are right, where there's a workforce to do it. and whether there's a, you know, a good business model in doing it. The government is only ever going to be building a very small number of houses, nothing like what the market needs. What we need is for New Zealanders to be able to earn enough to put some money aside. And one thing I would have liked to see in the tax working group report that came out yesterday was a lot more focus on how we could use tax to incentivize New Zealanders to save and put money into savings and investments so they can get these things together. And then, as I say, you need the housing market to be building plenty of houses.
Mm. I think the thing about a capital gains tax as well, though, is I read a book not that long ago called Generation Rent, which talks about how across generations we have an increase in our house prices. So back in the early 80s, it was about twice the annual income for someone for a cost of a house, which then went up to about four times by the 90s and then 6.5 by 2008. It does kind of look like someone who managed to get into the rental market earlier is now capitalizing on someone who hasn't had that opportunity to.
But I think the point you're making, and you know, you raise a fair point, it has become relatively harder over time from the average income to the average house price to get into the housing market. I'm certainly not disputing that. What I'm saying, though, is that if we think about how we make that more and more possible, we have to do it by building more and more houses. Because look, the laws of supply and demand are, you know, as applicable now as they've ever been. If we increase the amount of supply, then prices tend to come down or are moderated. And I think I might have mentioned to you before that in Christchurch post earthquake, when we came in and just said, look, this is an emergency situation, we overrode the planning laws to zone vast areas of land available for housing construction. We put in place the infrastructure and we said to the builders, get on with it. We had a massive increase in house building to the point where house prices in Christchurch over the last few years have been falling, rents have been falling because there's just such a supply in the market. The problem we've got in areas like Auckland, of course, is that for years and years, there hadn't been enough houses being built for a whole bunch of reasons, from infrastructure to land supply to construction market. And that's why you've seen that uplift you're talking about. So I'm not disagreeing that there's a challenge. What I'm saying is if we think simply putting a capital gains tax on is going to make a difference, I actually don't think it will. And largely that's because if capital gains tax is going to try and affect the price of houses, you have to have pretty much all of the houses in. Now, when you've got 65% exempt and then another 30 or 20-odd percent already covered, you're not creating enough of a difference to change the market prices. Mm. Do you see what I'm saying? That instead of 90-odd percent of the houses, they wouldn't be taxed any differently because they're either exempt or already covered. So I don't see it making a big move on the market. What we do need to do is just get more houses built, free up the planning rules, make sure we've got the construction workforce and make sure we've got the infrastructure in place.
Mm. I'm just going to jump on to another housing issue. So Housing New Zealand has just announced that they're going to be compensating those who were evicted due to the meth tests. Now, National, Judith Collins in particular, has come out and been in opposition. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, Housing New Zealand, of course, applied the standards as they understood them at the time. They didn't set those standards. Those standards came out from the Ministry of Health and Standards New Zealand, who said that meth contamination beyond certain levels was a hazard to health. And now, of course, we know better, and there's been science come through and said, actually, that's not right. But I think it would have been, you know, if you think what the uproar would have been if Housing New Zealand were ignoring health standards and applying them differently. So they acted on the best advice they had at the time. But I think what we've certainly reacted to this week is the vast majority of tenants who are in Housing New Zealand houses where there was found to be high meth residue is because they were smoking or cooking meth in their houses. And whatever we think of the residue levels and what safety issue they create, I don't think it's okay for Housing New Zealand tenants to be smoking meth, often in front of children, or certainly cooking meth, in state-provided housing. Now, to turn around and say they're going to be compensated for that would be, I think, pretty outrageous and not what most New Zealanders would expect.
I think that is slightly problematic to say that these people are definitely smoking meth in these houses, because the levels that were there are like our money has higher levels of meth testing done on them, and as well as there are lots of anecdotes about how these meth tests really damaged people's lives. There was one instance in which a woman, she had the risk of losing her child because of this meth testing. The state was talking about taking her child away in a custody disagreement, but then she had to prove through getting a strand test that she had never used meth in any way. So to say that these people are definitively criminals, I think is problematic.
Not all of them, and I'm certainly not claiming that at all. I think there will be some who have been innocently found to be living in houses where there are high, well, at the time, too high meth residues, you know, that the levels were higher than what the standards at the time said, and where there are people who have been caught up with no fault of their own. Certainly, it makes sense to look at compensation, but actually, Housing New Zealand, the advice we always had was that they evicted when they were satisfied that the tenant was responsible for the meth contamination. Now, that's different often to where the people had to be removed from health reasons and they were rehoused somewhere else. And in those cases, if they suffered loss or detriment with no fault of their own, then I agree that's a different case and needs to be looked at. And we're certainly not making a blanket statement that everyone in that 800 would have created the issue. What I'm saying is where the people themselves were responsible for the meth contamination, to suggest that they should be compensated because the test of what is now considered acceptable has changed is problematic.
So we would
differentiate based on whether they were responsible for the meth contamination or not.
So would that be more an issue of having an inquiry into these meth testings in terms of seeing who may have actually been responsible?
Well, I don't know if it's an inquiry, but I think you'd say what you would look at is, say, where people were evicted from their homes through no fault of their own, that should certainly be looked at for compensation and redress. But where they were responsible, but simply now the level of what is considered safe has changed, I don't think that is a good case for compensation. I don't expect New Zealanders who are being housed with the support of the taxpayer to be abusing that privilege by cooking and smoking meth in these houses, not only damaging the houses, but more importantly, the other people in the houses being subjected to that. Mm. Our concern is that to suggest people should be compensated when it's through their own actions that have led to that situation is pretty egregious. But as I said, if people have been innocently caught up as a result of that, then that can be looked at differently. Mm. But let's remember, these were the standards at the time. And now we know better, there's better science, and quite rightly adjustment is made. But I can just imagine the outrage of Housing New Zealand who just said, we're going to ignore what the health department are telling us the safe levels are.
And just on our last topic, so 125 years since the women's suffrage movement, I saw a really wonderful picture of you and other MPs all gathered around, all female MPs.
Oh, the
MPs.
Library, yeah.
Yeah, it was such a beautiful thing to see. How did you kind of celebrate that day?
Yeah, look, it was a really important day for me, actually. It's quite powerful to stand in Parliament as a representative, to be there, elected by my community, and having been fortunate enough to hold really senior positions in the Parliament, and to look back and think none of that would have happened but for the work of those incredible suffragettes 125 years ago. And also it's a sense of real national pride. You know, we are the first country in the world to have recognised the importance of everybody having an equal right to take part in the running of their country. And it was interesting for me and kind of powerful to reflect back on how far we've come, although I gave a speech in the suffrage debate and kind of what I was saying was, you know, we've come an incredibly long way, but I also think it's useful to reflect that we're certainly not there yet. And I would love to say, you know, the battle is won, but it isn't. Women, the status of women in our society is leaps and bounds ahead of what Cape Shepherd could have ever probably imagined. But equally, we can't stop the fight, I guess. There's still more to do. And, you know, I often say to groups of women when I speak to them and you know, to my daughter, the reality is if we think it's a level and even society and gender doesn't play a part, I'm afraid that's not quite right.
So I just want to talk about, with that in mind, what your thoughts are on the pay equity bill.
Sure. Yeah, well, look, we're really keen to see this issue addressed, and I mean, I'll talk to the substance of the bill in a minute, but what I guess has frustrated me with the government's approach is that National had a pay equity bill on the order paper at the change of government, and yet it was one of the only bills that Labor chose to what's called discharge from the order paper. So there was, you know, there's a number of bills that are working their way through when there's a change of government. And the pay equity one was just about one of the only substantive bills that they chucked off the order paper. So we had a chance actually to, at that stage, have been, you know, to keep progressing that legislation and been a lot further down the track. Now, they could have made changes to that if they had some differences with us, and they do. But instead, we're now 11 months later, and we're back sort of to starting with another piece of legislation that's actually 90% the same as our one. So not only did they discharge the bill that was already working through Parliament back in October, November, one of our members put that bill up again as a member's bill in April, and Labor shot it down. And then yesterday, you know, this bill comes back into the House that's 90%, word for word, the same as our bill. Mm. Now, I don't mind them having differences. That's what Parliament's all about. But what I do resent is that we're wasted 11 months where this, with this issue could have been progressed. And as I said, the government could have easily made changes through the process to one of those earlier bills. So I think there's a real waste of an opportunity to have progressed this sooner. In terms of the substance, obviously, with the bill being 90% the same as ours, there's a lot we agree with and we want to see progressed. But one issue that I think we've got a real difference on the government with is the government's bill allows for, when a claim has been accepted, for back pay of 6 years. And I think that's, again, going to create an incredible expense and burden on employers. If you're a small business owner and you're employing a workforce, and then a court somewhere decides that actually there's a group of your workers, when they match it with some other industry that, you know, you're not even aware of, and they think the pay rates need to be higher, you've got to back pay for 6 years. That's a huge expense. And I think, sorry, I know I'm going on, but if I could just say one thing, because I think it's really important to be clear what we're talking about. We're not talking about where two people are doing the same job, one's a man and one's a woman, and they're paid differently. That's outrageous. That's always been illegal. Of course, that should be addressed. We're talking about here a case where a court might decide that the average pay for, let's say, a nurse should be about the same as the average pay for, I don't know, just example, a corrections officer, because one's a male-dominated industry, one's a female-dominated industry, and they might say, well, actually, they're broadly the same. So it's really hard for any small business owner to guess exactly how that's going to land. And if it turns out down the track that a court says actually those, I don't know, flower pickers should have been paid the same as these car mechanics, and not only do you have to start paying them differently now, which is the process we're putting in place, but actually you've got to go back 6 years' worth and adjust that. That's a heck of a burden to put on small business owners who really couldn't be expected to have anticipated that, and I think that point of back pay is going to create all sorts of problems. It's one that the working group didn't recommend, and it's one that we are going to take issue with. But other than that, broadly, we just want to see this issue got on with, and as I say, we're pretty concerned that they've wasted 11 months to be at a point where we could have been at a long time ago.
Mm. That is all the time we have, Amy, but it was so good talking with you.
Nice to talk to you too, Laura.
I did just get an odd question, and I was wondering if you would be willing to respond to it. You absolutely don't have to, but someone wanted to know how many rental properties you own.
None. No, not residential rental properties. I've got a commercial property, but residential rental properties, none.
Mm. Well, thank you for answering that, and I'm looking forward to talking with you next week.
Okay, good as gold.
Have a good one.
See ya, bye.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95 BFM. The Wire.